And welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Ron.
Lead is not joining us today, but I'm Jean Marie, and I will try to be as boisterous and cheerful and energetic as Lita is. And I will fall flat. Okay, sorry. Collectively, we are the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we are speaking with Robin A. McGuire. Robin was born and raised in Chile, currently Minnesota. She has three wonderful children. Her eldest is a freshman in high school learning to drive. Oh, God, I feel for you. And excelling in her academic pursuits. Robin's middle child loves sports and music and is learning how to play the guitar all on their own. And her youngest son's smile lights up the room like sunshine, which is a little ironic since his condition, Shapiro syndrome, as you will soon learn, causes hypothermia. Robin is not only a bartender, a yoga practitioner, obviously an amazing mother and music enthusiast, but she is also a student. And I don't know how she gets extra hours in the day, but we are going to find out. And her family loves to have dance parties in their kitchen while listening to their favorite tunes. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Robin. Thanks for joining.
Yes, thank you.
Hi, thanks for having me, guys.
Again, thank you for joining us. We know what our weather is like here, and as we said, we were talking to people up down in Arizona, and it's quite warm. How was your weather in Minnesota today?
Well, I'm grateful it's sunny, and it's actually a balmy 30 degrees right now.
Oh, toasty.
I think they're actually warmer than we are right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I think it might be. Very nice. And Robin, can you start us off by telling us, because it's something we have never heard of before, what is Shapiro's syndrome?
Well, there's not a lot of information out there because of how rare it is. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's a neurological disorder that makes my son get really cold and really sweaty. And then when he's sweaty, he's wet. And so it gets even colder.
Oh,
wow.
And
I mean, even it sounds like, you know, something that you wouldn't expect to go hand in hand. I mean, but you do hear about like cold and clammy, and it sounds like a tough condition to deal with. And I mean, like, yeah, and as we know from research, it is extremely rare, because when you look up Shapiro syndrome, there's very little information out there. So I can't even imagine how you approached it as a concerned parent, but there are a lot of Dr. Shapiros out there.
There's a lot of what? I'm sorry.
Dr. Shapiro's. So when you look up Shapiro's syndrome, you come up with a whole host of Dr. Shapiro's, but not a lot of information about the syndrome itself.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's really hard to find evidence-based articles about this condition. So part of why it was so hard to get a diagnosis in the first place, it took us a long time.
Well, I guess there's classic Shapiro syndrome, which is the spontaneous episodic hyperhidrosis, which is occasional every few hours to every few years, sudden excessive sweating that may last from hours to weeks, spontaneous episodic hypothermia, so occasional sudden low body temperature, and agenesis of the corpus callosum, which if Lita was here, she would grab the brain that's over there and show us, but she's not here to reach it. And the corpus callosum is a bundle of nerves that connect the left and right sides of the brain. And so it's either not formed or is partially missing at birth. And then there's variant Shapiro syndrome, which is spontaneous hyperhidrosis and hypothermia. And it was Dr. William R. Shapiro, Guy H. Williams, and Fred Plum that originally documented this. Well, they noted it in 1967, got published in Brain in March of 1969. So it's a relatively new diagnosis. It's only been around for about 55 years. And that might be perhaps due to the advent of CT and MRI and other scanning technologies so that they can actually see what's going on. And then symptoms can occur at any point in one's life cycle, which is not something you see with most conditions. And it's extremely rare with less than 100 documented cases. So, Robin, can you walk us through your son Zeke's condition, how he came about his diagnosis, and you know, his diagnosis story?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it started right before COVID. January 2020, Zeke's his name. He was in the hospital because he was having trouble breathing. He had RSV and he had a really low temperature and they couldn't explain it. They didn't know what to think about the temp, but they observed him for a few days just kind of to monitor him. And then it kept happening after we went home. It would happen every couple of days. He would just be really cold. He would be sleeping and I would touch his forehead and it's like an ice box. And I would check his tummy and make sure he was breathing. And it was really scary.
Yeah.
And then COVID happened and we got nervous to go to the doctor. Things seemed okay, manageable. We got him some heated blankets and just started to keep the furnace turned high overnight all the time. And then the summer came and he was fine.
Oh.
And temperatures went back to normal. And then in the fall, when it started getting cold again, and we're in Minnesota, so it gets really cold, then the temperature swings started happening again. But this time it was, again, only when he was sleeping, but accompanied by night terrors where he's thrashing around in bed. It's terrifying, kicking, fighting, screaming, but his eyes are closed and he's still asleep. And his temperatures are anywhere between 91 and 94 and a half degrees. And so when that started happening last winter, 2020-2021, then we started pursuing more help with Children's Hospital in Minnesota here. And we would go into their ER. I mean, gosh, for a while there, it was a couple times a week just because we didn't know what to do. We didn't know if this was okay. And you read about hypothermia online and talking about organs shutting down when they get so cold. And so it's really, really scary, really tiring because these episodes would happen almost nightly. And so Dad and I are awake trying to navigate how to keep him cold and safe. Then one of the times we went to the emergency room, this doctor, I think we had seen him there before and he was taking some extra time to look into what might be going on more than just stabilization like a normal ER is only required to do. And he actually called the on-call neurologist and got us an appointment. And that's when things started taking a turn towards getting a diagnosis and being able to manage this. And then, of course, relief for Zeke to not be having these episodes every night.
Right. And how old was Zeke at this time?
Well, when we got a diagnosis, it was last spring. So he was 3 years old.
Oh my gosh. So he's at such a young age. He can't even, that verbalization. I mean, I'm sure you can interpret how he's feeling and what's going on as a mother, but still, he wouldn't be at that age where he can verbalize what's going on and, or really comprehend what's going on.
Back then.
Yeah.
This year he's able to verbalize and he'll say, "Hey, I'm cold and I want my heated blanket," or whatever he feels like will help him feel warmer.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. Robin, was this something that you had ever heard of this before? Is there somebody in your family that has Shapiro's, or was this all brand new to you?
This was all brand new to me. I'd never heard of it before.
Yeah, and we hadn't heard of it either, and it sounds like it's extraordinarily rare. And Robin, how has your healthcare team and how have you and your healthcare team decided to treat this condition? And is it treatable?
It's all unsure.
Oh.
Now Zeke's being followed at the Mayo Clinic.
Okay.
And so they have this like team approach which is wonderful. But there's kind of a waiting game and waiting for everyone to connect and get on the same page and then come back to us.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a sleep study a couple weeks ago, and we were waiting for the sleep study to see if he could start clonidine.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make sure I have that right. Clonidine.
Okay.
And because they didn't want him to be on any medication when they did that. And mm-hmm. so now we're waiting, and hopefully we'll start on clonidine and see if that gives Zeke some relief.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah. And have you noticed that anything that like triggers one of these episodes, or is it just time of year? And also, how often is he experiencing it, symptoms, and how long do they last?
It mostly happens in the winter. It mostly happens when he's sleeping, and it is kind of hours. Usually he'll fall asleep, and then within 10 or 15 minutes, his temperature will drop drastically. And then you hope he has a good night and doesn't mm-hmm. wake up. And it happens every couple days. Right okay. now, it probably happened 4 times this week.
Oh, wow.
It's when it's cold.
Right. Okay.
So earlier you mentioned that he said he wanted his heated blanket. Besides that, is there anything that makes him feel more comfortable when he's experiencing one of these heavy sweating and low body temperature episodes?
Sometimes he likes to take a warm bath with a bath towel wrapped around him mm-hmm. and just kind of do a little spa session. I don't know. He says it helps him.
Okay.
Good.
And then, just the electric blankets. We have them all over the house.
Oh, wow. That's great. Is there anything that you can use to monitor his body temperature at night so that it can alert you when he's having an episode?
Not that I've found. Okay. I think I've heard of like rectal thermometers that would stay in and be a monitor. And it'll go off if it gets too high or too cold, but that's not something that we're interested in right now.
Sure. Okay.
I'm surprised nowadays they wouldn't have something that you could have on your body.
Right. I think there's a lot of things with like pulse oximeters and pulse and that kind of thing. But yeah, I haven't heard too many things about temperature.
Okay. Well.
Oh, yeah.
Although Dominic might be finding stuff for us.
He's scrolling through.
He is looking right now, actively looking for something to let us know. Okay.
So, Robin, do the doctors have any idea what causes this Shapiro syndrome?
I don't think that they do. I think I've read that doctors wonder if it's neurological and then if there's some kind of disconnect between the left and the right side of the brain where there's just not signals being read and so the body's not doing homeostasis mm-hmm. and regulating temperature, self-regulating temperature.
Okay. How do you feel having a diagnosis without any real information or sources of information for it? And how has it affected you and your family since you've learned about this situation or this condition?
Part of getting a diagnosis is a relief, and it's mm-hmm. joining a community of people that are like you.
Mm-hmm.
But this is such a small group, it's hard to find others. So there's some relief in getting a diagnosis. But then this diagnosis, it's not giving us any answers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not giving us treatment. It's not giving us why it happened. And it's not giving us what is the rest of my son's life look like.
Right.
So it's still scary and it's still worrisome. And sometimes usually I just try not to think about it and just manage the day to day.
Sure. And you just mentioned some groups. Are there any support groups out there? Other families that have children or people that are experiencing the same thing? Are there any of those groups out there? And how about your family and friends? How have they helped you and your family along the way?
We started a support group on Facebook. And I think there's 4 other members that either themselves have Shapiro's or their child does. It's just Shapiro Syndrome Support Group on Facebook.
Okay.
And then we've also connected with the Rare Disease Group on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Rare Disease Day is coming up February 28th. And then so my family is very helpful and active with advocating for Zeke and supporting Zeke. My mom always finds deals on good heated blankets and finds the softest ones for him because he really likes soft too. My dad helps with my other kids if we have to go down to Mayo Clinic or if Zeke's in the hospital for the night. And then I am in nursing school, so I have some friends that are nurses that have been really helpful in finding articles and navigating the healthcare system and even insurance. Because there's just a lot that goes along with having a rare disease, I'm finding out.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be beneficial to have a good solid support group because it's just too much for one person to do by themselves.
Mm-hmm. And it is amazing that, you know, not only are you helping, you know, your son and your rest of your family, but you're also going out there to help everyone as a nurse. So thank you for that. That's very admirable. And I guess my question is, what role have nutrition and fitness and self-care played in your life as a mother and a caregiver, given that you have, it sounds like, very little time? Even you're not even getting enough time for sleep. So how are you functioning and taking care of yourself with all of this?
Well, I try to do like exercise classes, and then I try to do them with friends. So I'm also having some kind of social
aspect. A great idea.
Mm-hmm. So we do like a lot of hot yoga, which is great in the winter here. My son likes to go to the gym, so fitness is something that we try to incorporate as much as we can. But then just like sometimes doing nothing is what I need to be doing. Sure. And so sometimes it's not even watching a movie. It's just sitting and coloring. And that kind of resets my brain and my capacity for the day, I guess. Okay. Just kind of recharging.
Okay. It sounds like a meditation through that. And okay.
Whatever you find is therapeutic for you is helpful. Robin, what else do you wish other people knew about Shapiro syndrome? And I guess what advice would you give for someone who is recently diagnosed with Shapiro syndrome?
I wish that other people knew that he's okay. Mm-hmm. He's fine. He's gonna be okay. He just needs a little bit more attention and a little bit more care, especially like at sleepovers or at school with physical activity, because he gets just more tired than other kids. And then I think once we got the diagnosis, it was really valuable to me to have some sort of sense of community. So joining a Shapiro Syndrome support group or the rare disease support group, and just finding other individuals that are going through something similar can just make it feel a little bit less lonely or a little bit less alienating.
Okay. Sure.
How are they at the school with him? Is he on an IEP at school?
I don't know if they have.
He's not yet. We're looking at an IEP, but he's in preschool. So right now we're looking at a 504 plan.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, we're looking at the 504 plan, which would help him so that he could take longer rest times at school because he gets so worn out.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, the school seemed really interested in what was going on and then kind of lost sight of how severe his symptoms can be. And then now they're taking it seriously again and are helping us kind of navigate how to get him extra support and maybe even like a para to help him regulate his body throughout the day.
Good. That's good to hear. Yeah, the more they can do for him at school to make it easier on him, the better. So I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. And Robin, what does the future look like for individuals living with Shapiro syndrome? Is there any new research coming up or any new medications on the horizon?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's a whole lot of I don't know.
Yeah.
I read about a research study being done at Mayo Clinic here in Rochester, but it's only for adults. So Zeke isn't eligible to join. But I did reach out to them and ask them to share information as it comes out.
Sure.
But that's all I know.
Okay.
I've connected with, through our support group, I've connected with other parents and then another woman that has Shapiro's. And a lot of, there's three total. So all three of them have other symptoms and conditions that are going along with the Shapiro's. So a big part of me worries that there's going to be more added later on as he grows.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it seems like it would be even more rare to only have Shapiro's and not have comorbidities.
But and maybe it opens a window where you are more aware and will catch things sooner than someone that, didn't know what was going on, especially given your personal medical training and experience.
Speaking of that, Robin, how have your experiences with the doctors and other healthcare providers influenced you with your own future career goals?
Something that I've really taken away from this experience is the difference it can make when a provider really listens to the parent or the patient. Absolutely. Rather than deciding not to.
Mm-hmm.
Because over the past 2.5 years, we've had doctors tell us all of our thermometers are broken, we're doing this to him, or their thermometers are broken.
Oh my gosh.
At the hospital. And now we finally have a diagnosis. But it was really challenging to just feel like I wasn't being listened to. So going forward in my career as a nurse or wherever I decide to go beyond that,
mm-hmm.
I'll make sure to remember that lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And when a parent tells me that they think something's wrong with their kid,
mm-hmm.
to just invest in that and to mm-hmm. believe that they know their child.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Yeah, that's absolutely horrible. But I have to say that I'm grateful that you're there and that you've decided to pursue this career in medicine, because I think a lot of people will benefit from that. And it sounds like you are extraordinarily busy. And you must be very driven to pursue this career. And yeah, thank you very, very much for that. I think we all appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
And we definitely need more advocacy.
Yes, yes. And you're taking it right to the top by being there in the mix and actually, a part of treatment and care. Is there anything else that you wish that people knew about such, rare diseases, but in general, but very rare diseases in particular? I mean, there's rare and then this is very rare.
Yeah, this is very rare. Some things I wish people knew. When people have a rare disease, or when their child does, or when their family member does, some things can be really hard to hear, like, oh, I hope he feels better.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I hope he gets better.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, maybe he'll grow out of it.
Mm-hmm.
These things aren't helpful and they're not supportive. And they're even more alienating because it tells me that they don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
You're right.
Yeah. And that's okay. I know people have good intentions. Mm-hmm. But maybe taking the time to look into what is supportive in this situation, or asking me, how can I be supportive? So if you know someone that has a condition, particularly a rare disease, maybe just asking them, how would you like me to be there for you?
Okay.
Or what is helpful?
Mm-hmm.
That's excellent advice.
Yeah, I was going to, because that's what I was going to ask is, yeah, what can people do? So that's fantastic advice. Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate that. It's, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, we wish more people, again, I think people mean well, but the way what they say comes out a lot of times is not helpful. So just asking what they can do is much more helpful.
And Robin, thank you ever so much for taking the time to join us today. And we hope that, you know, you, and I don't want to say, you know, that you stay warm, but yeah, it's, I mean, it takes it to a whole new level. Yeah, I mean, I want to send you like, I want to send you blankets and lots of love. And yeah, just, I hope that you take, you know, take care. And I'm hoping that any medical students and researchers and PhD candidates out there realize that this is an avenue for future research, and absolutely, we need answers. And so that in, you know, he'll, in his future, he'll be able to say, oh, this is something I can, you know, this is something I'm living with, and this is something that I have control over. And yeah, because it's something that not many people know about even.
Right.
And you know what? By coming on this show, we have lots of listeners too. So, you know, they can look this up. They can, you know, maybe do some research. We reach out and we touch a lot of different people. And by you coming on the show, you're getting the word out to thousands of people.
Right. And your advice to ask, what can I do to support you? I think that alone, that statement can really benefit countless people. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. It's amazing.
Oh, it's no problem here. We appreciate you taking the time because you sound like a very, very busy person. So we really, yeah, we appreciate you taking the time.
If our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, TikTok, or even Instagram.
Or Meta, which is, I think, all of everything.
We're going to have to change, yeah.
The Amazon of social media.
Right.
If you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast or subscribe on Apple. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare providers with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.